framed in, sometimes in wood, sometimes in stone, often a combination of the two, framed on top of the horizontal elements that sit on top of the columns. Those entablatures, as we call this horizontal business that sits on top of the vertical columns, the entablatures are important to us for a couple of reasons. They were very beautiful, they could be very intricate, they could be very complex, but they very often have flat, rectangular, sometimes square, but usually rectangular patterns, plaques, called metopes. And here, sculpture was put. Here, sculptures were put. Flat, frieze sculptures were placed in these metopes. So, the buildings have architectural dimensions, and the decorative dimensions of the buildings also give us certain artistic opportunities. The Parthenon itself was in almost perfect condition in Athens until it was hit by a stray shell in 1687. The Turks controlled Athens at that time, and they were actually using the Parthenon as a powder magazine. And a stray shell from a Venetian ship struck the Parthenon, blew the roof off, and blew off a considerable part of the colonnade on one side, and left it in the ruined state in which we find it today. Fortunately, there were drawings made in 1674 of the building as a whole, though we had other reason to know what the building as a whole would have looked like. These drawings are crucial to us because they show us all of the sculpture in situ. Now, of course, that sculpture is scattered all over the place, and much of the finest of it, the so-called Elgin marbles, are in the British Museum in London. This has been a considerable bone of contention between the Greek and British governments for a very long time. So if you really want to see the Parthenon sculpture, you don't go to Athens, you go to London. The Parthenon is more than 100 feet long on its two lateral sides. It's a very big building. It has 8 columns across the front instead of the usual 6. It has 17 down each side instead of the usual 12 or 15. It is a very big building. It's meant to be big and impressive. The floors all curve slightly outward from a point in the very center of the floor. They bow slightly out towards the corners as a means of trying to defeat the ordinary foreshortening that we have when we look at a building. In other words, the builders of the Parthenon tried very hard to play an optical illusion on an optical illusion. The point of foreshortening, of course, is if you stand, say, between two railroad tracks and look down the track. It looks as if, at a point in the distance, the two tracks come together and converge. We know perfectly well that they don't. Normally, if you look at a temple, it looks, as you're looking down the colonnade, as if the columns at the back are shorter than the ones at the front. By building the Parthenon with curving surfaces, an attempt was made to limit somewhat that sense of foreshortening. It's also true, for example, that the columns of the Parthenon, at a point about a mile and a quarter above the building, would touch one another exactly over the center of the floor. This is a remarkable building, and none of that was designed in by accident. It's large, but it is also graceful. It is elegant. It is beautiful. Now, curious enough, as you may know, if you wish to see what the Parthenon actually looked like, you don't go to Athens, you go to Nashville, Tennessee, where there is a scale model of it, built in stone. And one can see it, actually it's built in concrete, but one can see it to this day looking rather like it looked in antiquity. The Parthenon has 3 great sculptural programs. These programs are meant to depict important things from the history of Athens. The pediments, the triangular ends of the building, depict, on the one hand, the birth of Athena, and on the other end, the battle between Athena and Poseidon for control of Athens. 2 great mythical historical events in the history of the city. The metopes, these panels going around the entablature, have a whole series of historical stories. The Greeks and the Trojans, the mythical battle of the Lapiths and the Centaurs, for example. Battles between the Greeks and the Amazons, for example. Now, this was not uncommon in temple architecture to have mythical scenes from the past. In Athens, not surprisingly, Athenian contributions are featured. And Athens is given a very long, a very glorious history. Around the cella, however, there was a continuous frieze, which is a little bit new. This was probably, there's some controversy among art historians about exactly what was depicted there, but I think the prevailing view is that it is a depiction of the great Panathenaic festival. In other words, here, the Athenians are shown themselves now, not their glorious past. That's something interesting and important to think about with respect to the Athenians. The building was meant to talk to the Athenians. It was meant to make points to them. It was meant to make points about them. its immense size was meant to be impressive. The cost of the